Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, continuing our countdown to D-Day's 75th anniversary on this Memorial Day weekend 2019. More on Memorial Day in a bit, and next time we'll focus on paratroopers who jumped behind enemy lines. But how much do you know about the more than 800 gliders that made a daring descent behind enemy lines on June 6, 1944? If you'd really like to dive into that history, I highly recommend a trip to Lubbock, Texas, and the Silent Wings Museum, one of the best museums I've ever been to, complete with an actual glider from World War II, and even a replication of Rommel's asparagus, the strategically placed poles meant to deny safer, effective landings for glider infantry groups. Morris Bennett was one of thousands of would-be glider pilots to train there in West Texas.
Lubbock, Texas was going to be the main training base for combat gliders. We got to Lubbock, and they said, well, we got too many here to train at the same time, so everybody's going to have to go through engineering school at Wichita Falls, Texas. And that is how to put the gliders together, how to manufacture them, repair them.
And for people that aren't familiar with it, what are these gliders made out of?
They're made out of tubing and plywood and plexiglass and covered with fabric, which was dope that they used to use in making model airplanes. In other words, the same idea, what they call dope on the fabric, and that would make it reinforce them. So we had to graduate from there, and then we went back to Lubbock, and we took our advanced training there. And that was the fall of 43, and I graduated from Lubbock in December of 43.
So we're still a little more than 6 months away from D-Day here, and you would spend some of that time undergoing ground warfare training like an infantryman or artilleryman would. They had you ferrying gliders from base to base around the country, and then one day they tell you, you've got to go to Fort Bragg, North Carolina for some special training. I'm sure you had no idea how significant this was going to become. Tell me what you remember about that.
We went on down to Fort Bragg, and we were there about 10 days, took special training. We weren't told what our mission was going to be, but we knew we were going to go to Europe. And we got to Fort Wayne, Indiana. We was given all our shots, and I issued special ammunition, special guns, special revolvers, and special watches. And we sat there for about a week. In the meantime, what had happened, in Europe, the weather had changed, so they had to change the invasion date for Normandy. I know we were slated to be dropped way behind the lines, this fellows that was doing this type of work for reconnaissance or take some special deal. They never did tell us what it was, but with the equipment we had and the shots we had, we knew we was going to be on something special. But anyway, they called that mission off. Sent us to Boston, and we went, instead of flying us over where we were supposed to go, or the roads, we went across on a troop ship, which was took 3 or 4 days, and I joined the 439th Group and the 94th Squadron of Troop Carrier, which had been in England about 6 or 7 weeks, something like that. We knew that invasion was coming very shortly, so we had to carry full packs and run for every day. And so we got there and they didn't have enough American gliders, so I had to fly a English glider, a Horsa glider, and in Normandy. And I went on June 6th, in other words, just a breaking day probably. We was on double daylight saving. It was probably 4 o'clock in the morning. We took off from our base, and I had just had paratroopers is what we had instead of glider fighters, which normally glider infantry is what we normally would carry. But they had put paratroopers in these gliders, and they didn't like, they'd rather jump than ride a glider. The Horsa, a British glider, will hold 30 people, plus the pilot and the co-pilot. And we had gas masks, so we didn't know what we would have. So we were one of the few gliders that landed intact in Normandy. And we landed, like I say, it was just breaking day. Pro ships had already been in and flown paratroopers in and dropped them about 4 hours before we went, and they came back to England, refueled, tied up on the gliders, and when they would take us off, we were Cliff Mueller, which passed away a few years ago. He was and I flew together, and we were in the air. Cliff was on the in the first pilot seat, and I was on the other one, and we couldn't get the nose wheel up. The tow ship was already in the air. Normally, the tow ship is still on the ground, and we were in the air. But you could see the exhaust because this was daylight, dark. You could see the blue coming out of the exhaust. And we were still on the ground. We were about ready to cut off and land in the ocean. And we went ahead and made the deal. We were back about, I think we was 45 or 40, usually 550 gliders in a stick, what we call a group. Each group would have a deal, and it takes about 45 minutes to make the group together to come back in a formation. And they're four abreast, just staggered four across.
Well, and it seems to me, and again, a lot of people might have no knowledge of gliders at all, so they probably want to know, what were the tow ships? How did you guys get airborne? What?
Normally on a Warsaw glider, they were towed by the British four-engine Fairfax bombers. But our C-47s or DC-3s, which are, some people call them one thing, some people call them something else, they were able to tow a Warsaw glider or two CG-4 gliders on twin tow, which we flew later on, but not on Normandy, which was just a single tow on, or even on the CG-4s. Like on takeoff, when we couldn't there, here about 10 years ago, Cliff came by and visited me one day, and he says, "I guess you know you saved my life." And I said, "Why is that?" He says, "Don't you recall telling those paratroopers to some of them get back on the plane a little bit so we get the nose wheel off?" And I said, "No, I don't remember." And he says, "Well, I sure as hell did."
You had to rebalance the plane, huh?
Yeah, balance it up to get, that's how come we was able to go ahead and get off. Otherwise, we would...
You never would have gotten off the ground.
In other words, we would end in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And with these 30 guys behind us, that's much aid in this thing. And we weren't that really good Horsa pilots because we hadn't flown that in a Horsa that much. The CG-4, in other words, I could have done a lot more with it, but they were not with that thing.
You spent over a year training to fly one kind of glider, then... On the biggest day of your life, you end up in a glider you've never flown before, and you're going to end up in the English Channel, and you're all going to sink in the ocean if you didn't make that adjustment, huh? Where do you think that came from? What clicked in your mind to ask them to do that?
I don't know. It just wasn't coming off. We said we got to get some weight in the back end up to get the nose up. I don't know. It's just one of them things that you do.
What was your mission, and how did it unfold?
Normandy, in other words, we landed, like I say, about daylight. We got to St. The CP, it was about 10 o'clock in the morning, which was a command post where the 101st troopers, paratroopers, and with St. Mary Galice is where the town was that we landed, and that's where the CP was in an apple orchard. As soon as we got there, in other words, I told the glider pilots, in other words, you head back for the beach. Your mission is done for this deal. Go back to the beach and you fly another mission. So we started back, walking back. Some people rode a bicycle or most of you walking. There was about 15 of us got a Jeep that had been wrecked earlier. We got on it and got back to the beachhead. And the tanks were coming in by this time. It was probably 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. One of the tank commanders says, "Get that pile of junk out of the road." And we just drove off the side of the road and off the sand dune and walked on the rest of the way in. And then they said, "Well, these guys have all lost their guns and everything coming in. So stack your guns and ammunition over there. And these other fellows have lost theirs on the landing. They've got something to work with." And they said, "Get on this landing craft and go out to this British cruiser that has shot its guns out on the earlier landing, they were earlier that morning, they're going back to Britain." So by 9 o'clock, I was on this cruiser, and the next morning I was back in England. And I got a 3-day pass because, in other words, everything worked all right, and I didn't have to go back on another mission on that one.
But I'm sure there's a lot more to that day than what you just shared with us. You take off from England, and you are going over the English Channel, being towed by these bigger planes. What did you see? Did you see a bunch of other gliders? Did you see bombers everywhere? Did you see ships down below? Paint a picture for us.
Thousands of all types of battleships. The Navy was, there was the landing. In other words, we could see the firing. In other words, ahead of us where we were headed. And as the tow ships went in earlier, as I was said, earlier, in other words, they dropped the paratroopers, and then so when the tow pilots got close to where the anti-aircraft fire was coming up to us, in other words, they already had turned, and they'd be going straight ahead on us, but they'd already turned, and it was off to our left. It was almost 0.25 degrees from where they should have been, and so we kept going as far as we could till we cut loose, and we could see a field that we could land in. that didn't have the telephone poles, what they call the Rommel's asparagus. And the hedgerows is what got most of us. We had no idea that they briefed us on the hedgerows, but they didn't tell us that the hedgerows are full of rocks, which was maybe 10, 15, 20 foot wide and 10 or 15 foot high. And that's what most of the gliders ran into. In other words, that landed, the crash stop was hitting the trees and the hedgerows.
So I'm going to ask you some dumb questions here, just because this is not something most of us are familiar with. When you say you cut loose, how do you do that? How do you get the glider loose from the tow?
You just hit a lever, and it drops the ring out of the tow ship, out of the glider, and that's it. And the tow ship can cut you loose, too, because they could do the same thing. They could do the same thing. They're supposed to have somebody watching the glider all the time, but sometimes they didn't do it.
So on this one, June 6th, you pull that lever. You're on your own. You've got 30 paratroopers in your plane with you and a co-pilot. You're responsible for all these lives. You're on the most intense day of battle in world history, basically, is what you're facing here. You get a little adrenaline rush there. What was going through your mind as you cut loose and realized, here we go?
You don't realize that the people behind you there, in other words, you just go ahead and do what you were trained to do, and you do it automatically. You find a place that you could get in and land and try to get down in one piece is what's the biggest thing that you try to do on that type of thing.
And could you see the artillery and the ships below firing away at everything or no?
Oh, yes. You can see the fighting on the ground. But we're only 500 feet, so you're not going to see very much. So we come in and land at a close, at about 500 foot is what we come in and land in. It wasn't like the Risley flew up high and cut loose and circled and come down. In other words, they pulled you in right close to where you're going to drop off.
Well, that seems to me like it would make it worse because there's even less margin for error when you come in at 500 feet. So what did you see and how did you know where to go and where to land? And were you scared at all? Because I'd be scared out of my mind.
Well, in other words, we were briefed about these fields being flooded with water. Of course, you knew it wouldn't be very deep. I could see a cut in the trees where there was an open deal and a little field beyond that. And if you were good at what you were doing, you was able to get into it. And we figured we'd get into it, and we did. All we did was knock the nose wheel off when we hit one little ditch across, because you couldn't tell from the air by a little ditching. But we knocked the nose wheel off, and otherwise it was landed right up where we were supposed to be. And everybody got off. There was a few of them sick. But
okay, so now you're coming in. You fly in over the beaches where all this fierce fighting is happening, and you're supposed to land behind enemy lines. You don't really have a way out of there other than your 2 feet. How do you know where you're going, and how do you think you're actually going to make it out of this alive? You know there's a war going on.
It depended on the guys that you had with us, in other words, the troopers, because they were more advanced than we just followed the boards. We were just a trooper then. After we got on the ground, we were just whatever maybe he was a first sergeant or somebody else. He says, in other words, like the band of brothers, you come on with me and you go, we'll get back to where we're supposed to go. We knew we was going to be the same as, at least we knew about where we were, but not exactly.
Did you have any idea? I mean, obviously your own life is in jeopardy here, but did you have any idea of what those paratroopers would be up against with the kind of fighting they were going to face?
No, I don't think any of us really knew what was going to be up against. It was one of those things that everything worked out good for me.
Was that landing? Were you anxious? Were you nervous?
No, I wasn't. Just like no different than flying in Indianapolis when I would come in and land in where I was supposed to be, or the first time when I ran out of gas. I had another one when I was in training, in other words, on ferry. In other words, the tow ship, the glider came loose from the tow ship. They didn't make a good connection with the tow ship. And I was over out of St. Louis in the Ozarks. Everybody and all the farmers in little towns in the woods in the Ozarks, they come looking. Here was an 85-foot airplane in our backyard. And it had been snowing, so there was probably about 3 or 4 foot of snow on the ground. But I flew a pattern in, and I seen a little hump in the snow, and I figured that was a fence, and sure enough it was. So I just got over it and sat down, and I dug in the snow, and I flew up to this guy's barn, landed right close to his barn. They took us in the house and fed us biscuits and bacon, and boy, really had a real good meal. And pretty soon the constable came, which is the law enforcement they had on the new Model A car, and he took us to the little bus stop. And I had a telephone there, and I called the base, and they said, oh, we already know your tow ship circled you and said you were down okay. So, but the tow rope had come loose from the glider. We never did anything, so we just left it there. And the Army sent in a ground crew and picked it up.
Well, in the snow by St. Louis, they're waiting for you with bacon and biscuits. But on June 6th, when you put that thing down, was there concern that enemy forces might be nearby?
Oh, yes. We knew they were ground people because we'd seen them. The dead fellas already there where they had, the paratroopers had already been fighting with them on our way to the CP. And we knew that they were being shot at every once in a while then. So we was in a, we took the hedgerows, the roads along the hedgerows, and we'd be in the ditches. And we stayed in the ditches like that until when we were strung out maybe 10 to 15 feet apart, protecting each other, till we got to the CP. And then on the way back, when it was in that Jeep, in other words, we got come under sniper fire for a while, but we took care of the 17 of us, took care of him, and then we went on our way back to the beachhead.
And did you have any special instructions for what you were to do with the glider after you landed it?
Just leave it.
I know, I'm sure you've told these stories before, but you describe it so matter-of-factly, and it sure seems intimidating to me to land a glider behind enemy lines and have to work your way back, not knowing where the enemy is, to be shot at by snipers, all of this stuff that you've never experienced before, and you're just a young kid. What do you think it was that helped you get through that and helped you believe you could?
I don't know. It's just the way that, I suppose, the way that I was raised, in other words, and worked on. My dad was killed when I was 1930, so I was 8 years old in an automobile accident, a foggy morning at Hanford. And so I lived with my grandfather and my uncles, and they did taught me all the things that I needed to know to survive.
They must have taught you pretty well. So you told us how you got back, but even when you get back to that beach and you're supposed to go out to this British ship, what did that beach look like? I mean, was there devastation everywhere?
Well, we were strafed a couple of times. We had to dig into the sand because of the Germans had, they came and strafed the beach with fighter planes a couple of times, but didn't last very long until our fighters took over, and that was it. They were still firing at that first on the 6th of June at night. That night, they were still fighting on the beachhead.
And you got to get off that beach. A landing craft took you to that British ship. But I imagine there are a lot of images from that 24-hour period you simply cannot erase from your memory. What'd you see from the deck of that ship?
I seen this big ship ahead of mine or something, and it was big. It was maybe 200 or 300 or 400 foot long. I mean, a big ship. I don't know whether it was a cruiser or what. But it just went up in the air, and then down I went. And you knew all these guys were on it. Never seen anybody get off of it. So, I mean, that was probably the worst thing that I'd seen as far as of all the other things that happened. And that was just before dark.
So many American lives in harm's way in so many different ways on June 6, 1944. That was D-Day glider pilot Morris Bennett, and you can link to his complete original interview at hometownheroesradio.com. More than 406,000 Americans died while serving in World War II. They're among those fallen heroes we honor this Memorial Day weekend. Each one of them has a unique story, of course, and when we come back, we'll follow along on one man's quest to learn more about the courageous uncle he lost in World War II. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.